I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. I'm back again with Rick Gaiman of DFSOnDemand.com. Rick, we talked late on Sunday night. I guess it wasn't that late, but have you come down off the Tiger Zozo high? That's not a sentence I ever thought I would say out loud. But how are you feeling in the afterglow of that Tiger win?
I've not slept a single minute since then. No, I mean, it's just been really cool. I mean, I feel like every time I refresh my Twitter feed, there's another great stat, there's another great article. I've just been very happy to consume, yeah, over the last day and a half or whatever it's been, to consume as much Tiger information as possible. And yeah, I mean, we got a WGC here on deck, but this little Tiger hangover hasn't been so bad.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because a lot of people, are including myself, are kind of spinning it forward into 2020. And I think that you're like, I've sort of forgotten, not that he won the Masters, but that he will be the reigning Masters champion at the 2020 Masters and also have won since then and probably be, you know, I don't know that it'll be the favorite. I don't know if he is right now. You might know that, but at least one of the two or three, like it'll probably be him and Rory and Brooks. And that's probably it, like at the top. And that part of it, I think, is going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, they did bump him up. Brooks is the current favorite right now, but he's at Tiger's there at 10-1 with Rory right behind him. So it is. Yeah, you're right. I think the expectations, and we kind of talked a little bit about this. I try to keep my expectations very low on Tiger just after all the injuries, and you know everything has the caveat of, you know, if he stays healthy. So I've kind of tried to keep my expectations very low, but it's really hard to do that now, Kyle. It's really difficult as we're entering this season. You know, he's 1-for-1 on starts and wins. Like I'm just trying to restrain myself a little bit, but it is going to be really cool.
Yeah, no, it totally is. So there's a lot to look forward to there. So I wanted to kind of backtrack a little bit and just kind of give people an idea of your story. So you started at DFSOnDemand.com and just kind of like how you got to that point and you know, kind of your path in the media world right now.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, DFS On Demand was started as really a pet project, and what it is just me in a bunch of databases and creating visuals and tools that you can interact with. And I created it for myself because my background is in marketing automation, which is really just like working within giant databases and trying to figure everything out. So I created a website to house all this information for myself because I wanted to see, I want to see every time Rory has played this specific tournament, or I want to, you know, look back at the last 15 tournaments that this guy's played or whatever it ended up being. And I just had a website for it. And then I'd share it with like, you know, my buddies, and they're like, oh, this is really cool. You might have something here. And it kind of grew out of that. So it's really just kind of a convergence of my professional background being a lot in databases and then my personal passions, which lie in sports and specifically golf, and those two coming together to now, yeah, now this is my full-time job to be able to deep dive into as much golf data as I possibly can on a daily basis.
I know some of our listeners are just fired up about that sentence. What, right. How did, like, what was the transition like going from, cause I presume when you started it, you had a different job that was not in sports, and what was that like? How did the transition go from that job into doing this full time?
Yeah, so I mean, it was actually kind of similar. So my real job, I was working with college athletic programs to help them sell tickets. So, you know, Oklahoma State would be a school that I would that I would work with, and, you know, try to help with their marketing campaigns and things like that. So it was very natural. I was in the sports world and I was working in databases, but this is just something I did on nights and weekends and on the side. And it's kind of weird how it has evolved to the point where the side site, you know, grew to the point where I was like, you know, I think actually my time is more valuable and I'm much more passionate about what I'm doing on the side. Maybe I should move that over to be my main thing.
Who were your, and I've got people who know my background. I've got something a little bit similar that is still kind of ongoing, which I have an Oklahoma State site that's on, you know, kind of my side project, side yeah. hustle deal. Who were some of your, inspirations or people that you looked at and were like, ah, that's not even in sports necessarily, but just like, oh, that's pretty cool that this person did this, and that encourages me to like, hey, maybe I can do this as well.
Yeah, you know what, my drug of choice, Kyle, is Shark Tank. So like literally, like every time I watch Shark Tank, and just to hear entrepreneurs and like, you know, they put everything on the line and they've got these startups and they're getting to the point where they're growing and they're transitioning to, like, all of that is so inspiring to me. So it doesn't even have to be this specific person. It's just when I hear stories, when I see people who are doing something that they're really passionate about and I'm feeling the same way, to kind of take a lot of that emotion or passion or fire or whatever it is and translate it to whatever I'm doing. It's awesome.
Yeah. My drug of choice is, the podcast, How I Built This. I don't know if you've
okay.
If
yeah. That's a good one.
But I can't get enough. There was one that they replayed one this week about, Larabar, like the,
yep. That was on Shark Tank too, I think.
Yeah.
I
know. Yeah. And I was like, well, yeah, I'll listen to that one again, even though it's about, like, you know, peanuts and dates and it's just preposterous, but it's, yeah. I'm so fascinated by people who, take calculated risks and sometimes uncalculated risk and right. Find success. So anyway, we could talk about that all day. What about golf? Like what was your growing up and getting into this? Like what kind of, you know, stirred you in terms of like, oh, this is, I really like this. This is a really cool thing and got you going in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, I played golf growing up. You know, my dad introduced it to me probably, I don't know what I was, 11 or 12 years old, something like that. Played it all throughout high school. And I'm from outside of Philadelphia. So in Pennsylvania, golf in high school is a fall sport. And I also played baseball, which is a spring sport. So I went to college on a baseball scholarship. And when you get to college, golf is a spring sport. So I couldn't do both of them. So I chose one, did my baseball scholarship. And then literally, like, since I've graduated, it has been all golf. Like, I just love it. Can't get enough of it. I live in Southern California now, so I can play year round. And I try to play at least once a week, get out there and knock it around. And it's just been this growing passion. And then you flip to something like the PGA Tour, which is deeper than ever. It has great names with young guys. And it's just as exciting as I ever remember it to be. Yeah. You know, I got a little taste of Tiger, obviously, growing up, but it really is so deep right now. And you can, you know, you've got villains and you've got the good guys and the bad guys. And it's like, it's so dramatic. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm romanticizing a little bit, Kyle, but like, it's so much fun week in and week out.
No, I don't think you are. I mean, if you go back and look at the leaderboards of some of the majors that Tiger won in the early 2000s, you're like, wait, what? Like,
who are these guys?
not even like their names, but just like, there's just the personality. I mean, it's just not like, just in terms of like the big, like Brooks size personality, it's not, it wasn't there certainly, maybe as players for those guys back in that day. And that's just, you know, that's just how it was. And I certainly agree with you that it's different now. What about college baseball? Where'd you play at?
So I played at LaSalle University, which is outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
So played there. Didn't play too much, but they paid for a good portion of my college. And so it's something that I'm very passionate about. Baseball. I'm a Phillies fan, kind of unfortunately, but you know, it's one of those situations where it's hard for me to kind of sit down and watch a whole baseball game now. But I can sit there for, oh my gosh, fire up PGA Tour Live at 7 a.m. and then watch that. It's just, I don't know. It's just different. And I'm so into golf right now, and I don't know why, and I love it.
Well, it is different because I think the primary reason it's different. So I played baseball too. I played in college as well. And I think the reason it's different is because when you're watching golf on TV, there's always action, right?
Yeah.
Every shot, every putt. I mean, there's so many shots, so many putts, so many things happening. When you watch baseball on TV, it's like there's like 6 minutes of action over 4 hours, and
yeah.
You're like, well, I you know, and I get it, like I'm not sophisticated enough to understand like what's happening, you know, all that stuff. And it's like, well, maybe that's true, but maybe not.
You should see me try to explain the game within the game to my wife while watching it. I'm like, no, that's like an unwritten rule. It's not like a real rule. It's like an unwritten rule. And like, and she's ready to strangle me. So yeah, it's a little difficult to keep on the TV.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So last thing before we get to HSBC Champions and the beloved Bermuda, what's your day-to-day look like now? So this is your full-time deal. I presume you're just updating databases a lot, making sure all that is, you know, safe and sound in terms of the data that you're giving to people. But what, just give people an idea of like what you do when you wake up every day.
Yeah, I mean, I do live in databases, which is pretty sexy, I know. But, you know, so what I try to do, because what I found very quickly is, especially now with golf too, is there's so much data and more coming through it every day, is that a lot of like the users of my site or even like my friends were like, what am I supposed to be looking at? Like, there's so much to comb over. There's millions of rows here. So I try to do on my site and just like even on Twitter when I send stuff out is like I try to comb through. I'll create visualizations so that it's like kind of easier to understand the data. So really my day to day is maintaining those databases, trying to, you know, identify trends, create these new visualizations and tools that I think people are going to enjoy. And then I get the opportunity to kind of supplement all of that with, you know, creating YouTube videos about previewing, you know, this week's tournament or looking back at last week's tournament. I get to hop on podcasts. So I really am just looking for an opportunity to talk about golf as much as possible, the opportunity to find new stuff about golf as much as possible. And that's kind of what I do from when I wake up. And then I, you know, shut it down at 5 o'clock when the wife gets home and I'm ready to talk to another human.
Have you noticed that as golf has moved more toward gambling, that the data has it gotten easier to access or harder to access?
Oh, great question. It is notoriously difficult to access, but I think that more people are getting the opportunity to kind of disseminate it. So I think it is a little bit easier, and I think people are focusing on the data a lot more, which makes me happy, right? I don't necessarily just do the eye test. I'm a big data guy when I come to decision makings in both fantasy or the betting world. So I do think it's becoming easier to access that data. Now, whether you have the ability to understand that data or how you want to use it, I think becomes the next problem. Because now there's so many and you know this guy, there's so many stats on the PGA Tour. It's like, you know, someone would be like, oh my gosh, you know, this guy is the best in the world from 100 to 125 out of the right rough. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like 6 shots he hit last year, like from that range. Like either you got sample size issues or it's just so noisy that it's almost like data paralyzing you at some points.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think sometimes – yeah, you get so deep into that stuff. Even like I like to look at like iron play from like, you know, 200 out, because I think that's interesting. I think, you know, guys like Justin Rose and different, especially going into some of the longer courses like in majors, you're like, okay, well, who's been elite this year from deep? And it's like, well, there's 13 shots. Like, what am I supposed to do with that? You know? Yeah, that's it. It seems like it would be in those, you know, organizations' best interest to be more like the deeper that this thing goes into like gambling, to be more open with that information rather than more closed off, right?
Yeah, one would think. I mean, I think if there is not already a market for, there is going to be a market for some sort of open source API, right? And you could get people to pay to access it. And here's all the official information. You know, you don't have to collect it from seven different sources or whatever it is. And that could be an additional side income for something like the Tour if they wanted to put something like that together. So I think there will be a standard. And you see this in other sports, right? I mean, the NBA, they want their integrity fees, and they want their starting lineups to be paid or to be submitted 30 minutes before the game. So, I mean, we're definitely heading in that direction. The PGA Tour has always been a little bit slower to move on the gambling stuff, it seems. So yeah. I think we're headed in that direction, and it might be, you know, I hope it's 1 year away. It might be 5 or 10 years away, but I think it's the market's going to be too big to pass.
Yeah, so. For sure. Okay. Well, let's talk about it. HSBC Champions. We got the first WGC of the season, or the last of the year, however you want to look at it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, coming up. We are heading over to Shanghai. It's a good field. I don't know if it's quite as good as last week's, but let's talk about this course real quick. When you look at this course, this is a place that the PGA Tour has gone for quite a while now. It looks like last 8, 7 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. When you look at this course, what are you seeing, and how does it affect maybe some of the guys at the top of this field?
Yeah, so I think there's two versions of this course, because they've been playing here for a while, but they did do a bunch of upgrades back in 2014. It looks like they made the fairways a bit tighter. The rough a little bit thicker to penalize those shots that miss the fairway. It's still bent grass green. So I'm still going to be looking for guys that hit the ball very well off the tee, especially now that they've narrowed it out a little bit. And then it has kind of a really interesting blend of holes here. You've got drivable par fours. The par fives are really gettable. There's a fun stat that I read. I wish I knew who tweeted this. My bad. But in 2014, Bubba Watson was 14 under par on the par fives, and he played the rest of the holes 3 over and still won this tournament. So I mean, like, if you want to go out and feast on the par fives, like, that's one way to get there. So it is really interesting. I think it opens up. Obviously, in almost every situation, the longer and straighter you are, you're at a bigger benefit. But this week especially, and then obviously being able to feast on those par fives isn't going to hurt as well.
Yeah, you're right. It has been here since, it looks like, 2005, but they moved it in 2012 for some reason that I don't remember. That's when Ian Poulter won it.
Got it. Yeah, I don't remember that either, but it is a pretty solid. I mean, with all the new tournaments that are popping up and lack of course history, this one's as almost as solid as it gets.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point. So there's 78 guys this week. The bottom of it is like, I don't know any of these guys, but like, how does a small field like this, and this is something we talk about a little bit, I guess, as it relates to even the Masters, the Tour Championship's a more extreme version. You see it in the playoffs some, but how does a smaller field like we've seen in the last few weeks affect the way that you're thinking about, you know, kind of like making picks on some of these guys?
Yeah, in general, the smaller fields, the cream rises to the top, and it's not necessarily the smaller field as much as it is the fact that there's no cut here. So the Masters, for all intents and purposes, almost like a no cut event. I mean, because you've got all the guys down at the bottom who are your past champions. Those are the guys that are missing the cut. Like, all of the guys that are going to compete are getting through. So when you guarantee four rounds, you know, outside of some withdrawal or DQ to these guys, like, it ends up being a really big deal. And we saw that with Rory last week. I mean, Rory had a really poor opening round last week at the Zozo. And if it was a cut event, he could have been, you know, floundering around the cut line the next day. Instead, he goes out, he shoots three really good rounds and gets himself in inside the top five. I mean, this stuff, when you give the best players in the world four guaranteed rounds, the cream usually rises to the top. So that's kind of where, when I'm making picks, whether it is betting, whether it is fantasy, whether it's versus my dad, and we just say, hey, who do you think is going to win this week? In WGCs and these non-cut events, it tends to be the studs that win them.
I'm sure that Paul Casey and Justin Rose appreciate you noting that they both missed the cut at a no cut Masters earlier this year.
they don't feel the same way about that, I don't think. But for our purposes, it's basically a no cut event.
Okay, let's go, guys that are undervalued going into this week. I know you have a list. I got a couple as well. Hopefully, I didn't pick the same ones as you. But who are you looking at that has? We've got Rory as the favorite at 11-2, it looks like. We've got Hideki at 12-1, and then Xander at 14-1. Those are your top three, but who in the field are you looking at maybe a little further down that has some value?
Yeah, so I'm kind of in the middle range there, the 25 to 50s. I think when you start getting down past the 50s, you start to lose a little bit of that value. But someone like Sung Jae Im, who, you know, we kind of shouted out when we chatted on Sunday, like, I love this guy. And it's so impressive the way he gets around the golf course. You know, he gains strokes in almost every single category. So he's a really he has a really high floor. It's if he has a bad driving week, you know, he can make it up with the rest of his game. If he has a bad putting week, like whatever, he's not a one trick pony. So he's sitting there. I think I've got him at 28-1. He's coming off a third place finish at the Zozo. He's someone that I think wins this more often than he's actually valued at, is the first guy.
Yeah, I like that. With my first guy, I'm going to go with Corey Connors at 50-1. He played really well for most of the event last week at the Zozo. And I keep going back to check on the stat to make sure it's real. He finished ninth on the tour last year in strokes gained tee to green.
Oh, it's real. Oh yeah, the guy can't putt. He can't putt. He was
181st in putting.
Yeah, he's brutal. You'll find I am very much hashtag team no putt. I love Corey Connors. Yeah. And I think you're alluding. I mean, even if he goes out and putts like average for a week, he can win the golf tournament because he's so good tee to green. I love Corey Connors.
Yeah, so I've got him as my first guy.
Okay, I'll back that one up. I've got Billy Horschel at 33-1. I think very, very sneakily around the world, he's been playing really well recently. Dating back to the WGC, the FedEx, St. Jude, he's got four top tens in his last seven starts. And what I like about Billy, and we've talked about this with a couple of guys, like Brant Snedeker is similar, Jason Duffner at times is similar, where they're very, very streaky. Like Billy Horschel can pile up top five finishes. We've seen him get hot at the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then he'll kind of like disappear for a little bit, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, and then he'll come back. And I think we are in the midst of one of those really good streaks for Billy Horschel, coming off the sixth place finish last week at the Zozo. So I'm trying to ride that Billy Ho hot streak.
Yeah, I like that. He's been top 10 in two of his last three events worldwide. I'm gonna go deep on this next one. I've got Zhenzheng Zhang, who, if people don't know, he was the regular season money winner or points winner or whatever we're calling it on the Korn Ferry. The Korn Ferry's finest, Zhenzheng Zhang. He's from China. He's the number 123 ranked player in the world. He's 100-1. This week. He's had a really sort of under the radar start to this season. So he misses the cut at Greenbrier, and then he has three straight top 20s at, I think it was Vegas, Napa, and then Houston. He finished in the top 10. So at 100-1, just, I don't know, maybe the home country thing. I don't know. This is the first, this is actually the first event on the Asian swing that he's played, but I kind of like him this week at 100.
I like it too, and I'll tell you why. I mean, he has played this event a ton, which you don't really see from those guys who are 100-1 because they're usually just getting into the field or whatever. But because I presume he got into this event from the like 10 or 12 exemptions that the Chinese tour gets every single year. So this is like the first time he's playing it as like a PGA tour member, but he has plenty of history around this track. So I think that's a really good one.
Okay, who you got for your third?
My last one, I'm staying in that middle range. So I'm going with Shane Lowry. I've got him at 40-1. I think he's the most interesting guy in this range. I look for just these really small samples of guys who are about to get right. You know, we hear this a lot, Kyle, where, oh, he found something in the final round and now he's like taking that with him next week or whatever it is. Shane Lowry had the second best score on the weekend at the Zozo Championship behind only Rory. So we saw him at the end of last year, which is kind of normal. You get the big Open Championship win. He faded a little bit, but he's played well in Europe leading up to this week. He has got a handful of top 15s, including last week at the Zozo Championship. So to me, someone that I know can end up raising the trophy on Sunday. Here's a fun fact about Shane Lowry. I'm pretty sure he's the only guy in the history of the PGA Tour that his first two wins are a major and a WGC. So I know he can handle this, and I like him at that number.
That's like the junior Brooks. The lesser Brooks, like he only wins. That would be great if Shane Lowry ended his career with like four wins and they were only WGCs and majors.
Yeah, that'd be so sick.
I don't do the memorial. I'm good. I'm staying at 100-1. These are probably sucker bets at 100, but Kurt Kitayama is somebody who he's finishing the top five in his last two events on the European Tour. So he goes fourth at the French Open, third at the Italian Open, and then he also put up a T14 at the BMW PGA Championship, which on the European Tour is a big deal. And he's up to 83rd in the world. He's had a really good run over the last couple months or so. He's 100-1 as well to win this event. So I kind of like him further down. It's a weird event because it's like super top heavy with that Rory, basically with Rory. And then you've got the next group with Hideki, Xander, Rose, Casey and Stenson are kind of in there, but there's a lot of guys down there. Like Phil's 80-1, Lucas Glover's 80-1, Kevin Kisner's 80-1. There's a lot of guys that are further down that you're like, I don't know if he gets hot this week, he could, you know, run one off. So I don't know. It should be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Woodland, I'm looking at 66-1 right now. I mean, I agree with you. And I don't know. This is where I'm always sitting here like, does Vegas know something I don't know? Or like, what's happening here? But no, I think you're right. You know, I don't know what the strategy that you or the listeners usually take on bets, but like this is the choice where you have to decide, okay, am I going to go for someone top heavy or am I going to go for someone down in the middle of the pack?
Yeah.
And I think I actually read Gary Woodland's, he's not in this field this week. I was reading his Masters odds. So disregard that.
I was going to say 66 sounds. That
I was
sounds
like, that
insane.
Can't be right. And I looked back, I swear, because I was looking at those Masters odds from earlier. So my bad.
I saw a couple weeks ago, I saw a Barnrat at like, it was like 100, it was like 1,250-1. And I was like, I'm going to empty my 401k and put it on but it was just a typo. It was supposed to be like 125-1.
Yeah, that sounds more like it.
Okay. Let's take a break. We're going to come back, talk Bermuda and, just talk about how you find value for guys in some of these different events.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we are back with Rick Gaiman of DFSOnDemand.com. We talked to HSBC champions. We're going to talk a little Bermuda, but first, I guess I want to, and I talked to Eric Patterson about this a little bit last week, but just what is your strategy broadly, I think you alluded to it a little bit, for finding value here? Is it guys that just are bad putters, and so maybe they had a couple of bad finishes coming in or a little bit undervalued? How do you kind of go about that process every week?
Yeah, so I think I actually listened to Eric, and I think he nailed a lot of it, which is I look so deep into the tee to green guys, and I don't really care if you're a bad putter. And I know that sounds crazy, but you know, it's so much stickier to be good tee to green every single week. Like it's possible for the worst putter in the field to be the best putter in any given week. It's probably not possible for someone who is like the worst tee to green player to all of a sudden show up and gain a bunch of strokes tee to green. You know, someone who usually drives the ball 280 isn't going to show up and start out driving DJ or anything like that. So there's just much more volatility in putting. So I do like to find those guys that are going to be super solid tee to green every single week. And if they find a good putting week or even a neutral putting week, they're going to put themselves into contention. So that's kind of step one. And then really, especially in some of these, depending on the market that you're in, it's always fun to talk about who's going to win the golf tournament, who's going to be there for outrights. But a lot of the value comes in guys to finish, you know, top five, top 10, or top 20, because you're still getting decent odds there. And you're not just, you know, for lack of a better term, putting all your eggs in one basket that this guy's going to actually win the golf tournament. So I think there's a lot of value in the range of guys that you were talking about, right? You know, the Zhang and the Kitayama, like top 20, like that's certainly in their range of outcomes. Yeah. While a win, I guess, is in their range of outcomes, but might not be very likely.
Yeah, that's a great point. Why would I not just throw a bunch on Rory at minus 500 to top 20? Like, isn't he like an auto top 20 right now?
I mean, I guess, but and this is the one thing that I think, especially that I get, you know, tweeted at a lot, which is like, oh, I'm playing fantasy golf for the first time, and yeah, Justin Rose missed the cut at the Masters. Like, what happened? Like, golf's hard, Kyle. Like, golf is hard, and golf is people like it is really, really volatile. And the fact that Rory continues to pile up top fives and top tens, like, that's insane. Yeah. And I know it's like, oh, well, he was the favorite to win. He didn't win. That's a disappointment. Like, no, it's not. Like, golf is really volatile. Golf is really hard. Yeah. So, I mean, it's very enticing to pile up and empty the 401k, as you mentioned, and say, you know, Rory's in a 78 man field is going to finish in the top 20, but you know, stuff happens.
So my first ever tournament that I covered was the 13 Tournament of Champions, and I picked DJ to win, and DJ won, and I was like, this is easy. Like, yeah. I don't know what people would, and I think I picked like one guy right for the next 4 years, so shows how much I know. But I mean, yeah, the Rory thing, I was looking at it, so since the Masters he's this is crazy. He's either finished in the top 20 or missed the cut at every PGA Tour event. He hasn't finished between T21 and whatever T70 since the Masters. Everything's either top 20 or missed cut. He missed the cut at the Open, missed the cut at Memorial, which was weird, and everything else is top 20. And most of it's like top 10, top 15.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes if you don't have it, you really don't have it. Yeah. It's gone.
Okay. Bermuda. This field is insane. I mean, some of the names, I'm just going to read you some of the names. It is, hold on. I got to find it here. It's way down on the, okay. So Alex Noren is the favorite. He's the co-favorite with Denny McCarthy at 14-1. Some young guys that are really interesting that are just behind them. Scotty Scheffler's 16. Bo Hostler's up there, Sam Ryder, Doc Redman, Maverick McNealy's 40-1. But then when you go further down, it's like, oh my gosh, we've got Tommy Gainey's in the field. We got Derek Ernst, who's just one of the all-time names after he won the Wells Fargo like 6 years ago. Mike Weir's in it, Charlie Belgian, Kevin Stadler, Heath Slocum, Tim Herron is 500-1. Bob Allenby is 500-1. This is unbelievable. This field is unreal.
Brendan DeJong is here. Like, he used to be, I don't know how many years ago this must have been. It must have been 3 years, or I don't know, maybe more than that. He used to be an auto lock to make the cut. And it was like, in any fantasy lineup you ever played, it was like Brendan DeJong, like, start there and then I'll figure it out. Yeah, he's here. He's 750-1. I'm interested to, I mean, I think it's great that we're getting a lot of these new tournaments. It's kind of hard for us to, you know, me being the numbers guy, trying to figure out how to approach this when we have a brand new course. I mean, what are your thoughts? We've got a new tournament. This course has actually been used for other events in the past, but we've never seen like this type of field walk in here, I'm a little stuck on how to handle this. What are you thinking?
Yeah, with stuff like this, I actually tend to go, and I think you've seen some of the effects of the, or some of the results of this in the fall. I tend to go younger guys that are like, look, I gotta do something ahead of the reshuffle, ahead of the new year. I would love to, because a win gets them into Kapalua, even if it's right now, they get into Kapalua, like just to set, like to set themselves up for 2020. I love to go with like Joaquin Niemann or you know, somebody like that, who it's like, yeah, that makes sense that guy would be really hungry in the fall to get something to set himself up for the new year. So somebody like Scottie Scheffler, I'm like, yeah, that feels like Scottie Scheffler is going to win this event, you know? And that was one of my questions for you, is do you, cause right. We saw, Graham McDowell win, Puerto Rico. Was it this year or last year? Whenever he did it. And you're like, wow, that's crazy. Like he's like 41 years old, like winning an opposite field event. It almost feels to me like when that happens that it's a, and I don't know if this is like statistically true, that feels like more of an outlier than somebody like Sam Ryder winning.
Yeah, I don't know if it's statistically true either, but it has felt like a lot of the younger guys are winning. I mean, Morikawa won the Barracuda.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Finau getting his win here at the Puerto Rico. I mean, Troy Merritt won an alternate event. So, I mean, I feel like it does tend to skew a bit younger. And I don't know if it's narrative based or anything like that, but I agree with you. I mean, these guys know they've just removed the top, you know, whatever, 75 players in the world or 65 players in the world. And now they get to go and compete against one another. And so another one of my things is when you get to a new course, that benefits the younger guys who have never seen any course, because yeah, no one has ever seen this course.
Yeah.
You know, you're not rolling up to Augusta where everyone always tells you, oh my gosh, it takes you like 3 years to figure out these greens. And then like, you know, whatever, level playing field, which is why someone like Victor Hovland is so awesome. Like he's awesome everywhere, but like put him at a course that nobody's seen, and I feel like it levels the playing field for him. So someone like a Scottie Scheffler, who my only concern with him is that he's kind of faltered on the weekend in the handful of starts that we've seen him. But looking back at last year, I know that he can win tournaments, which he's done on the Korn Ferry. So someone like him is like my prime target. You know, I see him at 16-1. He's someone that I'm like, okay, really good, ready to emerge. We know he's going to be a great player on the tour. Very likely this would be a great spot for him to get a win.
Another guy I like at 80-1, I can't believe I'm talking about 80-1 at the Bermuda, but Doug Gim is 80-1. I really like him. He had such a good amateur career. I know he hasn't really done how did he do on the Korn Ferry? I don't even know, but I really liked his game as an amateur.
The Gim Reaper. Yeah. I don't mind Doug Gim. Fairly solid. So I have a handful of events for him on the PGA Tour where we have shot link data. Pretty good with his approaches, which is one of those stats that tends to be sticky. You know, you carry that with you week to week. So I like Doug Gim. He's very good around the greens. 80-1 is a really good number. Someone like, I'm actually pretty surprised to see, where did you mention Doc Redman at 30?
Yeah, he's at 28, yeah.
Yeah, that to me is like, wow, okay, he's put himself in contention quite a bit. He piled up the money when he needed to at the end of last year. I mean, he's a guy that I feel like is ready to break out and capture that win as well. So 30-1 in a field where I don't think he's, you know, the 15th or 16th best player, which is basically how he's priced right now. I think he's a little bit better than that. Kind of intrigues me.
Yeah, another guy, this is like an all-Texas event. We got Bo Hostler, Scheffler, Gim. Yeah. Spieth should join. What are your Texas power rankings right now? Is Spieth in the top three?
Oh, man. I really hate to bury Spieth, but every time it comes up, I feel like I bury him. yeah, I mean, there was a fun little wager I know a couple guys had where it was like, who's going to win more events in the next 2 years, Spieth versus Bo Hostler, and everyone kind of laughed at it. And it's like, that might not be that bad. Like, if Hostler goes out and runs this one and wins it, like, Spieth's got some catching up to do. So, yeah, I mean, Scottie Scheffler is probably number one, right? And then I don't know. Spieth can't be in the top three, I don't think.
God, that's tough. I like Spieth a lot. As a person, as a player right now, I don't. He's great to deal with. Where do you fall in guys? Like, there's some interesting names that like, these are guys that were, I think both of them were ranked number one in the amateur rankings. Peter Yuan and Ollie Schneider-Johns, who they kind of started out really well as pros, and they haven't, you know, they haven't taken that Justin Thomas type path, but they're both still, I mean, like they're still around, like they're still playing well, but they're just not like at that level that you expected them to be at. Where do you fall on those two guys? Yuan is 40 and Schneider-Johns is 66.
Yeah, I think I'm much more optimistic on Peter Uihlein. He's at least made some cuts recently. I mean, you look back at his PGA Tour, I think he's like 7 for his last 8 cuts. He's playing well in the short game, right? His real issue is off the tee game. He loses strokes nearly every single week, but he makes up for it. Hits his iron shots pretty well. He's really great around the greens and he can putt. Ollie, who I think is here on a sponsor's exemption, he's just missing, like he just can't get it together. Quite frankly, he's missed like 7 of his last 8 cuts. He just seems lost in almost all aspects of the game. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. Sometimes I'm more optimistic if it's just like, wow, he can't hit his driver. Like, at least we know the problem. At least if he figures that out, he might be fine. But there's really no rhyme or reason to what's going on with Ollie right now. So I'd have to be a bit more optimistic on Peter Uihlein.
If you had to bet your life on one of these, this would be a really rough weekend for you if you had to do this, on one of these guys finishing in the top 10 this week. Just anybody in the field, who would you stake?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess I'd have to take the pure chalk, but no, let's think. Okay, if I was actually betting my life on someone to finish in the top 10, I don't mind Lanto. I mean, he's in this field. He's been piling up top 20s. Captured his first win. I'm hoping that he doesn't have that little hangover after the first win, right? But he'd probably be a pretty solid bet for a top 10.
Yeah, I think I would go. I would want to go Aaron Wise, but I don't trust him.
I don't trust any of these guys.
I know. I don't either. I think I might go. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I might go with Denny McCarthy.
Oh, you might not have a life on come Sunday if you're betting your life on it.
He went T9 at Houston. He went T9 at Shriners. He's feeling it right now.
I actually like personally really, really like Denny McCarthy, and I like his game. He just goes against everything statistically that I hate, which is like the magic putter syndrome, where he does it all putting. And, you know, you get one week where he doesn't start rolling it in and things can go sideways quickly. But I do really like Denny McCarthy. I think he's a great player, but I'm just a little concerned about how he does it.
That's a good point. I might go Scheffler, and then he would shoot like a 77 on Sunday, and I'd be
– That's the problem.
I'd be toast.
But he's – oh, man, he's so good. I think I was telling you on Sunday. I was at the Shriners this year and followed Scotty. Oh, man, he's so good. And, like, he is the real deal, man. I love this kid.
He's very unassuming, too, because he wears, like, those he's got, like, these baggy shirts on, and you're just like – he wore this sweater at the Byron Nelson this year, and it, like, went down to his knees. And it's like – whose kid is like hitting balls on the range? And then
get this kid out of here.
And he's just he's really solid. He's really consistent. He's a good player. Okay, real quick, we'll finish like this. Let's go. I'm gonna give you some head to heads for the HSBC champions, and we'll just roll through them really quick. Okay, Corey Connors or Louis Oosthuizen, both are -115.
Corey Connors, team no putt, baby.
Yeah, same here. Tommy Fleetwood or Adam Scott? Fleetwood is -120. Adam Scott's -110.
Adam Scott, super solid, high floor, and a better price. I'll take Adam Scott.
Yeah, I'm with Adam Scott as well. Sungjae at -110 or versus Henrik Stenson at -120?
Stenson might hurt his back flying through town here in China.
I knew that was coming.
Come on, that was a layup. Either way, Sungjae's playing too well and better odds.
I've just been refreshing Twitter, just waiting for this year's photos to emerge. We you know, Stenson flying over the city. The best part of that was like DJ's faces when he had to do it. It's like, what? I mean, it's like permanent DJ face, kind of, but
DJ's pulse never gets over like 60 beats per minute. So I don't know.
I'll go. I'll go Sungjae. He's been kind of feeling it recently. JT Tiger Sungjae would be a great way to go with the Asian swing.
That. Yeah.
Last one. This is deep. Chez at even or Haotong Li at -130. Haotong almost won this was it this tournament a couple years ago that he almost won?
I don't think it was this one, but it was something over here. He's had a couple of top tens here, but
yeah,
I thought he had a second place finish somewhere, didn't he?
I think it was just that he finished in the top 10, and that was okay, like that was a big deal at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, then it was here. I'm a huge Chez guy. Like, he's one of the only guys on tour I'm like taller than. but how he hasn't been playing well. And Hao Tong, sneaky long, sneaky good, already got his President's Cup spot locked up. I'll take him.
I'm trying to look up. It was 2016. He finished T7. Russell Knox just ran away with it.
Yeah, like 20 something under par, I think it was.
This top 10 is kind of funny to go. So Russell Knox was at 20, Kisner 18, Ross Fisher and Danny Willett at 17. It's like, are we sure this was a WGC?
yeah, right. How'd these guys get here?
Brandon Grace and DJ at 16, and then Spieth, Reed, Hao Tung Lee, and Matthew Fitzpatrick at 15. I'll go Hao Tung Lee. I like Hao Tung Lee. That's the only reason I'm picking him. Chez is like, man, it's funny because people have kind of been like throwing his name out there for President's Cup and stuff. And it's like, well, that's difficult because there's like just 12 guys that are going to be Hall of Famers someday that Chez isn't going to make the team over them. But I think it speaks to just like how he's been really good this year. And even though he's been really good, I feel like he still doesn't really get, even in golf circles, doesn't really get the kind of, you know, respect that his game has indicated that he should get so far in 2019.
I just don't think, I mean, and I completely agree with you. I just don't think he does anything that, you know, people want to write home about, right? He doesn't bomb it. He just does his business, goes around the course, does what he has to do. There's nothing super incredible about it except for the fact that he's had this longevity on tour and he's in the midst of what probably his best run, his best 12-month run of his career. I love the guy, but you're right. There's, when you're talking about President's Cup specifically, there's going to be a lot of guys that get their name called before him.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Rick, great stuff. Enjoy the databases this weekend, and we'll catch up after Alex Noren just runs away with the Bermuda Championship next week.
I wouldn't expect anything less. Thank you, sir.
See you, Rick.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.